Welcome to Executive Success. I'm Leslie Everett, and today we explore the choices, the habits, the leadership moves that shape extraordinary executives. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to Executive Success, where I go beyond inspiration and into the habits, discipline, and executive behaviors that create measurable performance. I'm Leslie Everett, and the conversation is for leaders who are responsible for growth and want to build it in a way that lasts. My guest today is Rob Nicklin, Chief Growth Officer at Compass Group Canada. Rob has led growth through the sales team during a period of double-digit growth, bringing a reputation for turning strategy into outcomes and building cultures rooted in accountability and belief. In this first segment, I want to set the foundation, Rob's story, what shaped his leadership philosophy across the UK, the USA, and Canada, and how he came to treat growth as a leadership responsibility, not just a commercial target. Welcome to Executive Success, Rob.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. First, I want to ask you to take me back for a moment to who you are outside the title. And what did your early career teach you about how people actually perform when it matters?
Yeah, good introspective question to get us going. Listen, first and foremost, I'm fiercely competitive. Really passionate about sports and have been, you know, from the youngest age. And I think for me, there's always been a direct correlation between competitive sports and that need for just continuous self-improvement, always getting better, always competing against yourself. And I think that just highly motivates me. So outside the title, I'm someone who gets a lot of energy from helping people and teams grow, both personally and professionally. And I think this stems, honestly, from my coaching career, Leslie, and time as a personal trainer, actually, because everything comes from there back to behavior-driven outcomes. And they're just guided by a clear plan, but measured, you know, through the evidence. And so I'd say that's probably some of the early experiences, but it's definitely shaped how I lead today. And behavior under pressure, I think, you know, tells more than good intention. That tells you that more than good intention ever will. So yeah, that's a little insight to the kind of the competitive spirit in me.
That's where it comes from. And it's amazing as we go through our careers, how much our history when we first started out comes back into play. And we can see those early lessons that we had back then and learn those things about us that we perhaps didn't realize back then are actually coming back into the fore today. So that competitive nature, but also very people orientated, I think, and the personal goals from your point of view. Now, you've built your reputation across multiple countries and markets. What's one belief that you carried from the UK to the US to Canada that still anchors how you lead today?
Yeah, I think looking back across my career and even today, I would say there's one core belief that I hold that's very simple, which is people perform based on the environment the leaders establish. And, you know, I've since known to then call that kind of the weather in every room, call it the climate, if you will. And as a leader, you're responsible for setting the weather in every room and also the climate you both experience and the one that you create. So I think for me, it's about making sure as a leader, I create as much clarity, trust and accountability and emotional harmony so that people individually can excel in their roles and within the wider team. So, yeah, I think if leaders generate confusion or politics or even a fear, and sometimes, Leslie, I've seen, you know, when we reward the wrong behaviors, then I think performance eventually declines. And regardless of how solid the plan may be that you may have or the strategy you're following, you tend to find that their success over time erodes. And so I think even more so now when we think about future, tools can accelerate speed, and we're seeing that with AI, but they can't create the trust. And I think that's what the role truly of a leader is. And I would say that's probably been my biggest learning, you know, multi-countries and multiple industries.
Yeah, it makes huge sense. I think, it's something I see a lot in my work is that behaviors are tolerated sometimes when they shouldn't be. And that creates the culture. And it's done without really understanding or being aware of the dangerous cultural environment we might be creating that stems growth and and reputation and building towards the targets that we've got. So I think that's a really important piece, that climate you talk about that we create that makes it safe for people to perform at the top level. You joined Crump Compass Group in 2009. You led UK sales at Chartwells. Then you moved to the US as SVP of Business Development at Levy. What did those chapters in particular teach you about growth in those really competitive environments?
Yeah, I think that, you know, having the experience of multiple sectors, multiple industries, and multiple countries is that the competitive markets may change, but the focus doesn't, and the focus needs to be on execution. And that's what really shows up. So I think, yeah, if you understand your market, what's winnable, what's addressable, what's viable, then the execution, I call that the wave. And I think that's applicable to any growth oriented business you're in, that you're trying to create scale, you know, understanding what's winnable, what's addressable, what's viable, and then how you execute that consistently over time, I think is important. So, you know, how well you build the system ensures the teams consistently execute to the same standards. You're not trying to remove the individual's approach. You want to encourage that. But what you want is clear standards. And people, from my experience, work best when there's clear leadership and direction and accountability. So I think regardless of the market, regardless of the competitive landscape, I think when we focus on the right opportunities and execute, then it comes down to discipline. And that then becomes what you're able to scale over time. And I think one of the phrases I like to summarize there, Leslie, is, you know, action is effort, but outcomes are the evidence.
Absolutely. Action is effort, outcomes are the evidence. That's such a key phrase, I think, that we need to understand. And also the piece that you talked about with focus there and clarity. Clarity of direction, I think, is something that is so important. We often, as leaders, think that we're being clear about what we need to achieve, but it's not always as clear to everybody else in the team. And that's something I feel that we should always keep coming back to make sure that clarity is there. When you look back, was there a defining moment when you realized that growth is driven less by strategy alone and perhaps more by behaviors every day?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have a firm belief that, you know, in sales, you work in a delayed return environment, which means the work you're doing today, yesterday, last 6 months is what shows up in the next 3 to 6 months. And so, yeah, one of those biggest lessons for me was clear when, you know, many years ago in my early sales career, I was sat in a boardroom and, you know, full of intelligent people. Everybody had the right to be there, tons of experience. But what was missing was the alignment. And, yeah, not because the strategy was weak, but because the behavior in the room wasn't ready. And that shows up, Leslie, when people are talking over themselves, people are afraid to speak up, and they may have a great idea, but you see that when curiosity gets suffocated. And then what happens is that confidence slowly slips away. And so the compound effect of those types of behaviors over time, you know, become a result of what shows up in the numbers. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, the behavior speaks long before the strategy shows up. And so if you want to see what's happening with your numbers today or the performance of the business, you really have to go back 3, 6, 12, 18 months and understand what was behaviorally being adopted. And typically you'll find that, again, it's not a lack of strategy or a plan on the page. It comes down to how teams show up under pressure and how they're consistently led. So I think for me, you know, they become the biggest learnings that I'm very much aware of in my leadership day to day at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with that. So what you're really saying is the numbers are important, but if we focus on the behaviors every day, then the numbers take care of themselves. That's what really supports at the end of the day. Yeah, I would agree with that. In your role today, what do you personally pay attention to first when you think about your week ahead? Is it the market opportunity, capability, or culture, or something else? And why is that?
I mean, without doubt, capability and culture first, above anything else. I mean, and that really is predicated on the behaviors. And I have a saying which, I think really summarizes that, which is what we do once might be interesting. What we repeat becomes our identity, and what we reinforce becomes the culture. And I think that's the most important thing. And then when we sustain that over time, well, that becomes the evidence. And so, I think people talk about culture, but actually it's what you build is what actually creates the culture. So I'm far more disciplined now on where we can win. And making sure that we approach the best opportunities, and so that as a result of that, the team have con you know, they have alignment in terms of what they're doing, how they're doing it, but giving them the space to be able to adapt and have their own judgment. I think that's really important. But yeah, I would say honestly, capability and culture, which is obviously stemmed from the behaviors. And how
Absolutely.
the team perform collectively and individually.
Yeah, and I guess just briefly, if you spot something that isn't in alignment, you need to deal with it, and that's not always easy. Is that the case?
Yeah, I think, more so now as well in a fast-moving world, automation obviously makes things even more important because you can speed up the selling process. But what will happen is you're replacing judgment. And what we rely on is being able to put the right framework in place that sellers have autonomy to, yeah, make judgment, but they have the opportunity to make sure that culturally we're adopting the same processes and standards of execution, because ultimately that's what's measurable over time.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you for that. Coming up, I'm going to be asking Rob about a career mistake or a misread, perhaps, that sharpened his leadership discipline and what it taught him about behavior under pressure. We'll be right back with more strategies, stories, and steps to help you level up as a leader. This is Executive Success on Now Media Television. Every executive faces challenges. But not every executive learns to turn them into breakthroughs. I'm Leslie Everett, and on Executive Success, we bring you insights, strategy, stories from leaders who have built remarkable careers. We'll dig into executive branding, communication, leadership mindset, team dynamics, and how to navigate pivotal moments in your executive journey. Catch Executive Success weekly on Now Media Television. Your front row seat to leadership mastery. Lead with clarity, grow with purpose, achieve with integrity. And we're back. I'm Leslie Everett, and you're watching Executive Success on Now Media Television. Let's continue building your executive edge. Welcome back to Executive Success. If you want more episodes like this, you can watch Now Media TV live or on demand. You can download the Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS for bilingual programming in English and Spanish. You can also listen to the podcast at nowmedia.tv. Today, I'm here with Rob Nicklin, Chief Growth Officer at Compass Group Canada. And now I want to talk to Rob about the side of leadership we don't talk about that often. And that's what happens when the plan meets pressure. Rob, tell me about a moment when you got it wrong. What was the decision? What did it cost? And most importantly, what did it teach you about leading in real time that perhaps you use today still?
Yeah, very humbling moment early in my career. I'd just been newly promoted to club manager of a prestigious hotel, country club and resort where I was leading and heading up the leisure facilities. And, newly promoted, you're full of confidence and you have some seniority in the organization. And one of the nice things that came with that role was staff meals, which I was very happy about. And one Saturday afternoon, I remember going into the kitchen, and of course, upon immediate entry, it was just pandemonium in there, like any kitchen on a Saturday would, a luxury hotel when there's two weddings going on, God knows how many people on the golf course playing, the leisure club's full. And I just instinctively was like, hey, where's the staff lunch? And to which, almost everyone in the kitchen just stopped. The place went dead silent. Everybody looked at me. And I thought, oh, this is a situation where I didn't realize at the time, which I've come to learn since, which is it's not about what's going on. It's not about what's on the agenda. It's actually what's happening in front of you. And the chef, as you can probably imagine at that moment in time, simply turned around and said, "You want your staff lunch?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he, from the other side of the kitchen, threw me this plate of food, which, as you can imagine, I left there, full of spaghetti, very humbled. And honestly, Leslie, it took me a couple of days to really reflect on the lesson that I'd learned. But in that moment, I realized that it's not about me. It's about what's going on elsewhere. And at any given point, you never know what anyone else is dealing with. And so, the way I like to frame that is, it's not what's on the agenda, but what's actually going on, and being aware of that. So, yeah, very humbling experience, and one that I work very hard on as a leader, to be aware of that in every situation I'm in.
Yeah, I'm sure it's something you're never ever going to forget. I can tell by the way you recount that story that it made a big impact at the time, and it's that grounded you. And I think it's important as well that we do. It's very important that we're aware of what's going on, but then also able to pivot and realign and refocus, if you like, if things aren't going to plan, especially when we're presenting or with clients, perhaps. As well, but within the team, from a leadership perspective, I think it's really important that we can pivot to something that fits that moment. When the pressure hits, that's when we damage our leadership brand a lot sometimes. So, what behaviors do you see in leaders that they default to that perhaps dilutes trust, that all-important word?
Yeah, I think, listen, under pressure, it's easy to let the discipline go. And that shows up when you have a situation of false certainty and people want to tell you, what you want to hear, not what you need to know. And that can cause massive problems later down the line. So that also is a problem when you reward the wrong behavior, under pressure. Again, you forego the things that actually become the discipline and the process. They pay less attention to the things we're getting wrong, and that's where the discipline obviously starts to cease. And when leaders start thinking that they already know what's happening, then people then stop bringing honest and truth to the room, because fear, again, as I said a second ago, fear of maybe allowing their voice to be heard, which I think is important. And Leslie, one of those things has become even more difficult to read is the world that we're living now in the virtual space. And especially when we're having meetings off camera, that can be a very difficult environment to manage through, and making sure that people are having their voices heard. It's very easy today to be able to hide behind dashboards, forecasts, and any generated AI content. And so I think the signals that we have, and we have to continue to ask ourselves, is focus on what we know, not what we think we know. Will this make us better? If it's better, why is it better? Because I think in asking these questions, then the question becomes, what are we learning through this process? And so rather than allowing leaders to hide behind the things that look like effort, it's under pressure, making sure that we come back to the discipline, so that, because otherwise that's what becomes the culture. If it's the things you tolerate under pressure that become the culture, and they're the things that people observe. They witness what's happening. The rest of the team see what someone does or doesn't do or can or can't get away with. And that actually becomes the culture. So I think, the false certainty is probably one of the biggest things to watch out for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, pressure's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. It's not an if it happens, it does happen. And I think it's testament to your leadership that I've seen in that you create such a solid foundation and a trusting and inviting and belonging community and environment and culture within the team that people can come back to that when they are under pressure. And it's not always easy and it doesn't happen all the time, but it's something that I think is important to get back to because we do crack under pressure and it reveals who we really are, perhaps, and our brand. You're known specifically really for linking performance with people. What's one behavior you changed in yourself that immediately improved results across the team?
Going from thinking I knew it all and trying to solve every problem to an environment that coaches in the flow of work. And, I have a reputation, certainly in my role now, and certainly within my existing team, which is always be coaching. And and that's same for me. If there's something I've missed, there's a blind spot and I'm in a room, and again, being aware of that climate that you create, I want the feedback. And as much as I want to make sure I give the feedback, because I think people learn from doing first and foremost, not through telling. There's more than enough stuff to be telling people what to do, but it's the how to do it, which I spend an enormous amount of my time as a leader focusing on. And that's liberating when you realize that I don't always have all the answers, but when I stop trying to solve everything and actually then embedded coaching into the flow of work, the results were better, but the accountability improved. And there was far less resilience, Leslie, on individual heroics. And then what you're seeing is the consistency in the whole team starts to rise, because that coaching just becomes a normal part of our everyday behavior. See something, say something, improve something. And I think that's the biggest thing, coming from a place of not trying to prove, but improve.
Yeah, I love that. Of course, that's close to my heart. The same coaching isn't applicable to every single individual, and that's why training sometimes now isn't as effective as perhaps it could be, because we can't put everybody in a room and expect that they all need the same training and the same messages at that time. So coaching in the flow of work is absolutely where I've seen the shifts happen, where you address something immediately, you have that open discussion, that transparency, you give the feedback, we're able to address it, what do we need to do differently? And that's different for every single individual. I'm sure you find that. So that's really the only way we can learn, is to have that individualized coaching in the flow of work approach, I believe. I love that. In growth roles, obviously slippage happens. What do you do to spot it early before it becomes a revenue issue or a revenue problem, a client problem, or perhaps even a culture problem?
Yeah, I have a there's a couple of things that I'm known for. Nicklinisms is one of them. And one of my Nicklinisms is this, which is slippage is inevitable in our business, but forecast inaccuracy is unacceptable at our level. And I think when you put that message across, you then start to again measure it and manage the behavior. So I try to slot I try to spot slippage, long before it shows up in the results. Again, working on that delayed return environment philosophy, which is I look at the truthfulness of the forecast. Again, back to that, not what I want to hear, but what I need to know. The quality of the conversations that the salespeople are having with their clients, and the relationship quality, and then the cadence of coaching that's happening to move the deals through the sales stages, and how quickly, more importantly, we're able to surface issues that could potentially become a roadblock for us down the line, so we can coach through those at moments of uncertainty. And whether people are speaking honestly and openly, sometimes is one of the biggest factors. So creating that environment where it's, again, I generally believe that we're living in a world where it's okay not to have every solution to every problem. And I think finding time to allow that conversation to unfold and that critical thinking. And one of the things I do to make sure that happens is set time aside weekly for that conversation to take place. Where are we in the situation? What is happening? So again, we can prevent the slippage from ever happening in the first place, because we're spotting the signals early and putting in the right measures through coaching to prevent any potential long-term issues.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and you're spot on with that. And I've seen it in action with you, particularly with the leadership team. And I think so much so that that trickles down into their teams as well, which is obviously a whole other area of discussion. But that's so important. To the leaders watching right now, who are thinking, "I'm carrying the growth number alone," what's the first behavioural trait or shift, rather, that perhaps can help them get out of that trap? Just in brief.
Yeah, I think, and I've been in this situation before. So to any leaders, future leaders listening, I would say moving from owner of the number to being the architect of the system is probably the most important thing that you can do. So when leaders carry the growth alone, they usually create a lot of control instead of capability, because you're managing by fear, and you're managing the wrong aspect. And so I think the better move for a future leader now is to design the behaviors and the rhythm and the standards that you want, and then hold people accountable to that so that they're all part of the mission collectively together.
Great, love that. Thanks, Rob. I'm coming up. I'm going to be moving us into the growth code, how it reframes growth as something practical, measurable, and repeatable. We'll be right back with more strategies, stories, and steps to help you level up as a leader. This is Executive Success on Now Media Television. Every executive faces challenges, but not every executive learns to turn them into breakthroughs. I'm Leslie Everett. And on Executive Success, we bring you insights, strategy, stories from leaders who have built remarkable careers. We'll dig into executive branding, communication, leadership mindset, team dynamics, and how to navigate pivotal moments in your executive journey. Catch Executive Success weekly on Now Media Television, your front row seat to leadership mastery. Lead with clarity. Grow with purpose, achieve with integrity. And we're back. I'm Leslie Everett, and you're watching Executive Success on Now Media Television. Let's continue building your executive edge. Welcome back. I'm continuing my conversation with Rob Nicklin, and now we're getting into something I know leaders crave, a growth approach that doesn't rely on motivation, charisma, or luck, but on repeatable behaviors. Compass Group Canada operates at real scale, over 25,000 associates across 2,300 plus locations. So behavioral consistency isn't a nice to have, it's the whole game. In this segment, I want to look at how we can translate growth behavior into leadership systems, operating rhythm, standards, coaching, and what evidence looks like beyond the numbers. Rob, you say growth is a function of behavior. What does that mean in practice for an executive leadership team, or perhaps any leadership team on a Monday morning?
I mean, the first thing it means is that we don't wake up on a Monday and ask the question, what are the targets? Which can sometimes, and most often at times, happens. Instead, we have to shift that from what are the targets to what are the behaviors this week that will make those targets achievable? Are we focused on the right opportunities, prioritizing those? And if so, what and how and when? And more importantly, are the leaders coaching the right things that week to be able to make sure those behaviors so stick? And one another thing, which is, are we focusing on the honest conversations early enough so that we can do something about it? And I think when you look at that day by day, week by week, month by month, what you see, Leslie, then is growth. As a function of behavior means we manage inputs that shape the result, not just the results once it's too late.
Yeah, very good point. And I would imagine that's something that a lot of leaders don't do, is leaving it until it's too late, and then we're scrabbling around trying to fix the problem. But really, behaviors, from what you're saying, are at the root of growth and getting those results and the numbers at the end of the day. So that makes huge sense. Lots of leaders actually track targets, of course. Very few track behavior. What are the three behaviors, perhaps, if we can pinpoint it down to that, that you watch, that you tell you early whether the quarter will be strong or not?
Yeah, I think three behaviors any leader should be watching closely for is focus, truth telling, and follow through. And what I mean by that, the first one being focus, are we choosing the right opportunities or are we chasing too much? You know, is it volume over quality? Second, truth telling. Is the pipeline real? Where are the risks? Are they being named early enough? And are the for and is the forecast grounded in evidence? When, how, what? They're the things that really become important. There needs to be a firm next step to every single thing and every single priority. And the first one becomes that, and the third one, sorry, is then the follow through. Do we do what we say we're going to do and actually deliver it, especially for the moments that the customer sees the us taking care in the discovery, in the emails, the speed of which we follow up, Leslie, I think, which is really important because, you know, the behaviors will tell you long before the quarter ends whether the number's going to come in. And if you're waiting to that point to then look at the number, it's probably already too late.
Yeah, and I'm thinking as well that something I see quite a lot is assumptions are made quite a lot. So is that something that you look at in terms of changing behaviors, is that we don't make assumptions or we shouldn't make assumptions, and is that something that often does cause us to make mistakes?
Yeah, I think the way you get out of the assumptive aspect is, again, what do we know, not what we think we know. If you continuously ask that question, because it's very easy for us to create ambiguity in the sales cycle at any given level, at any given type of enterprise level. So I think if you continuously focus the conversation on what we know, not what we think we know, it's amazing how much more clarity you can have in the conversation, and more importantly, how quickly you can escalate issues if there are any that potentially could be foreseen, short to near term in the pipeline.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that comes back to the coaching and the flow of work, I guess, is the questioning. Well, how do you know that? Why do you know that? And it opens up some areas of, well, actually, I don't. So need to change behavior. And I do see that that builds over time so that individuals do start to automatically do it. So that's great. In a business as complex as Compass Group Canada, how do you drive consistency without creating a rigid culture that loses initiative?
Yeah, I think the most important thing you, as a leader, you don't realize that the teams watch for, which is being very clear on standards, what you are and what you aren't accepting. That's not about scripting every move. Again, you want to celebrate the individualistic nature of each and every salesperson. In fact, I think that's a really healthy thing within a team. But being clear on the standards, the things that you are prepared to tolerate, not prepared to tolerate. For the greater good of the team and the collective number. And so I think at scale, people need to know, what must be true everywhere. What is the non-negotiable that we as a collective team are striving towards? The behavior and the decision principles, the operating rhythm, the flow through, the speed at which we work on stuff, like all of those things are really important. But the thing that makes them hold is the individual's judgment. And making sure that you're giving them the opportunity to double down on those human skills, Leslie, which I think, again, in the future state, that's going to become an area where I think sales teams are going to be the most exposed. As AI becomes everywhere and you almost have parity in everything, the differentiator in the future world, I generally believe, is going to come down to being behavioral. And customers will always remember the human elements, which is how you made them feel, how you handled complexity, how confidently your people responded, and whether you were able to create alignment, particularly in areas with sales when there is conflicting priorities. I think they're the things that become really important.
Yeah, there's some great stuff there. And one thing that you touch on there is that judgment is something that's critical. And AI, of course, well, right now can't judge. So we don't have that. So the human element of sales and growth is going to become even more important and have a lot more emphasis placed on it in terms of behaviors, I guess. Is there anything else to add on that? I think the judgment is such an important piece.
Yeah, I think again, if you are not creating, or have already, I would say, created an environment where you're coaching the human element, that what you're able, what you're basically, so if you strip everything away from the salesperson and said, right, everything is equal, what is actually the role of the salesperson today? It's to get another human being to make an important decision and move them towards change. So really, that comes down to the value you can deliver for that individual. But that means you have to listen and observe the non-spoken cues and then be able to make decisions based on the information you're receiving. So I generally believe that the salesperson of the future is no longer the carrier of information. They are the carrier of judgment. And I think that's going to become the single biggest point of differentiation in the future selling success of an individual.
Interesting. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Let's make this real as well. Can you share an example where you changed behavior and not strategy, perhaps, and it directly improved growth outcomes?
Yeah, I mean, one of the strongest, probably the most strongest example, and I've used this on a number of occasions, and I know you're aware of it, which is, the shift behavior model that we both worked on. But to give an example, and for those listening, a shift example is the framework that you use with the entire team. You apply shift in a developmental environment where you're trying to create and establish a baseline of where the entire team sits. The first question to ask everybody in that situation is, are you on the team or are you part of the team? Which is deeply introspective. And then what that shows up, which is the exposure of the differences and the position that different people see themselves again within the team. Immediately that creates, the siloed conversations. But shift in of itself takes the entire team through kind of five real phases, which is the first one, which is sense, hence the reason for shift. Kind of what is true now, and what can we actually say that we're doing? What do we stand for? Harness, which is tension. Where is tension in the team? How well do we handle conflict resolution as a collective team, not just within our silo teams? Integration, which is what behaviors need to become normal, best practices, ways of working. Again, not creating robots by any stretch, recognizing individuals, but the behaviors that last over time, which improve performance. Flow, which is the fourth one, which is how our new behaviors showing up. Forget that delayed return environment. What are we able to measure 3, 6, 30, 60, 90 days from now, where we can actually see that those behaviors being integrated? And the last one, which is the most important, Leslie, which is transfer, which is what is it that we need to teach through coaching, conscious and continuous training in the flow of work, so that it can become codified into the ways of working and shaped over time, which creates growth at scale. So I think honestly, any team leader right now that can sit their collective team down and ask them the question, are you on the team or the part of the team? That immediately moves from being strategic to behavioral.
Totally agree, and it's something that is really close to my heart, because it sounds like shift actually allows you to be able to measure the results, which is so important from behavior. So just to wrap up this section, tell us a little bit about the growth code.
I mean, an exciting project that you and I have kind of now been embarked on for a number of years. But I would honestly say that this has been something that has been in the making for me many, many years. And it was only when our two paths came together, and I think, we'd always been admiring each other's work from afar, but the more our conversations continued, and the more respect we had for what you were doing as a professional coach and speaker, and what I was doing in terms of a growth leader, there just seemed to be this natural coming together of a gap in the market, if you will, Leslie, that enables a system, a framework, if you will, that again, not about telling people what to do. There's more than enough information out there to tell leaders what to do on any given day. But how do you create a system that enables change to happen from transactional to transformational, but give the leader or an emerging leader or a business owner a framework for how change happens over time, but makes it stick? And I think that is in the behavioral change. And that really is, there's five core frameworks that set up the growth code. But the growth code in of itself is a book, yes. But what makes it unique, Leslie?
We can come back to that actually, because I want to come back to that uniqueness, if I may. I'm going to close this segment out, but let's hang on to that question, because I want to know about the uniqueness of the growth code. So coming up, we're going to go into leadership culture, accountability, support, executive presence, and all those good things there. But we'll come back to the growth code and why it really matters. We'll be right back with more strategies, stories, and steps to help you level up as a leader. This is Executive Success on Now Media Television. Every executive faces challenges, but not every executive learns to turn them into breakthroughs. I'm Leslie Everett, and on Executive Success, we bring you insights, strategy, stories from leaders who have built remarkable careers. We'll dig into executive branding, communication, leadership mindset, team dynamics, and how to navigate pivotal moments in your executive journey. Catch Executive Success weekly on Now Media Television, your front row seat to leadership mastery. Lead with clarity, grow with purpose, achieve with integrity. And we're back. I'm Leslie Everett, and you're watching Executive Success on Now Media Television. Let's continue building your executive edge. Welcome back to Executive Success. If you want more episodes like this, you can watch Now Media TV live or on demand. You can download the Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS for bilingual programming in English and Spanish. You can also listen to the podcast at nowmedia.tv, anytime, anywhere. Welcome back to our final segment. I'm here with Rob Nicklin from Compass Group Canada, and I want to close with what truly defines executive success. I want to revisit why the growth code that you mentioned before, Rob, is so unique, and the behaviours that protect reputation linked to that and strengthen culture and make growth sustainable. What are the biggest mistakes that senior leaders make, do you think, when they're chasing growth, especially the ones that look like ambition but are actually avoidance? And build into that why the growth code is so unique in helping to address that.
Yeah, I think doubling down on individual heroics and then for the greater good, I think that shows up in terms of chasing too many opportunities. You spread the teams thin. Which can often be mistaken for, you know, false ambition. It looks like we've got a lot of activity, but when you actually start to drill down into the numbers and start to measure the kind of the leading indicators, I think this is where this whole conversation around, you know, 3x your pipeline is probably at a point where that should be rethought. And I think a lot of emerging leaders now are, when you start to look at the leading indicators and measure the data historically, you analyze the past to predict the future. And I think, you know, you've got to comes back down to, are you really playing where you can win and getting very selective? It takes a very brave approach to just scale down the pipeline and only be able to focus on the things that are winnable, as opposed to just a lot of volume, which is a huge cost to the business. There's a lot of time burn. But also one of the biggest risks I see is it's a lot of intellectual property that's put out into the market without any return. And I think we should be protecting that at any cost. And there should be a value for that, Leslie. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that leaders make.
Yeah, great. And it sounds like the growth code covers all of this, and it's a system of how to build this in, which totally relates to building growth from behaviours up. How do you strike the balance yourself between high accountability and real support, so performance rises without fear of without fear actually becoming the culture?
Yeah, I think it's a balance. It's not a trade-off. It shouldn't be one or the other. I think accountability without resilience breeds fear, but I also think resilience without accountability breeds comfort. And so you've got to strike that balance accordingly. So I think if you want performance to rise substantially, people need clear leadership and direction, but the standards to which you're going to hold them to, and consequences, Leslie. I think that's also a really important thing. Clarity on what gets rewarded, and then making sure you're providing continuous support, again, for each and individual within the team, because the way that one person learns versus another is very different, but also tenure makes a big difference in there as well. If you've got someone that's only been here 1, 2, 3 years in your team versus 3 to 5 or even 5+, there is fundamentally a different approach that needs to be taken to get the best out of those individuals and making sure that you can continuously improve them as well, but making sure you've got, again, clear standards across the entire team. So I think easy to get more dashboards and signals that people can monitor, but it's actually much harder to create an environment of continuous coaching to improve performance.
Yeah, do you find that that the team adapt well to that continuous coaching in the flow of work, and does it take a little while to get used to? Do they enjoy it? Do some people resist it? How does it sit when you do employ that?
I think there's two things when someone brings in a new initiative, isn't there? There's the vision, which is, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it. And people don't believe anything until they see it. And so part of that is each individual has to go through their own journey. But if you don't hold on to those values, if you don't consistently deliver what you're going to say you're going to do, and then remind them through the data that it's actually working, that is why some of the most biggest change initiatives still fail in business. You can have a great vision. You can put the plan in. But if you don't hold people accountable to the standards, and if you don't then report on the metrics of the things that are improving, then of course it just becomes another big change initiative that didn't that failed. But more importantly, if you're creating the right space for those individual conversations to take place, then it's about how that individual feels seen on the team, and recognizing that what works for one doesn't work for another. I think that's one of the most important things.
And one of the things that I see with that as well, and in my work particularly, is that when you can help people to understand that their brand is important to their career, which most people understand anyway, but they don't really know where to start, you start to address that what's in it for me factor as well. So it's not then just about the job. It's about me and what I want to personally achieve, the reputation I want to build, how I want people to see me, how I want people to view who I am, what I want to be well known for. So I find that that added to what you've said actually is a really important part of growth, and perhaps the growth code as well, is taking ownership for me because it's important to me as well. And I think that's something that often gets missed. How do you, as a growth leader, how do you connect leadership behavior to reputation on that note? And what do you believe people consistently feel when they engage with you as their leader?
I think reputation is emotional, and I don't think people realize just how much of that is it can be impacted. Again, coming, that kind of ties that full circle back between, the weather in every room. You can't have inconsistency as a leader. And, sometimes I think leaders do forget that, if you want to have consistency, then you've got to be clear and fair and present, actually, is really important, and serious with your follow through and hold people accountable to it. It can't be these whimsical trust me statements, but only apply for some, but not for others. And I think too often in leadership, we see that. And the teams witness it, they observe it, they watch those patterns of behavior. And that's the emotional residue that you leave behind. And that is what becomes your brand under pressure. And I think brand in the world of AI, and you know this as an expert in that field, has never been more important. The brand is what people feel, not what you say it is. And I think that's going to become even more apparent for us when we think about, future leaders.
Yeah, and of course, brand is can be just a statement. Your reputation is built over a period of time, and it is through repeatable, viewable and seen behaviors that really build that up. So it's not built in a statement, it's built over a period of time. And yeah, I agree. I think it's our brand that sells us more than anything, and it's a focus area, of course. And when the stakes are high, how do you personally stay grounded? What's your personal asset that brings you back to clarity, perhaps, and discipline that you need in your role?
I've shared this with my team, and I try to encourage it as much as possible. I'm a big believer in slowing down to go fast. And one of the things I meticulously spend time each week doing is carving out time in my schedule to just think about what I'm thinking, which sounds much easier to do. But we're living in a world now where we are always on, where there is constant disruption, whether it be through social media and or just in the business, as well as making sure that you're taking care of the family obligations. But I think finding time to just slow down and think about what you're thinking, allowing time to just what's coming top of mind, what are my priorities right now, what are the things that are causing me the most concern, or more importantly, where am I the blocker to growth? Where maybe some of the things that I might be doing that is halting progression, and am I aware of them? And I'm giving myself time and the grace to just step back, take a minute, and actually be thinking of what's my impact on the team. And again, I think easier said than done. You have to be very intentional with it. You can call it an art of meditation, sure, but I try to really encourage my team to find 10 hours every week in their calendar to just stop and think about what they're thinking.
And that is one of the toughest things I find when I'm coaching people. Time is always a challenge, but unless you build that in, you're not building capacity in the team. And what I mean by that is you're not letting go of stuff, because you've got to let go of stuff to create the team to have that reflection time, and to let go of stuff that allows you to build the capacity in the team, and vice versa doesn't work. So I think that's such an important thing in leadership. I see leaders today just busier, in their own words, than ever, and it becomes a challenge. And it's not a healthy challenge. And I think having that reflection time is so important. It's almost owed to the business. It's needed for you at your level to pay that back into the business to have that reflection time rather than just steamrolling ahead because there's no time apparently to do things. So I love that, and that's something I always try and build into coaching. Looking ahead, what do you think will differentiate organizations that sustain growth from those who don't? And what's the one behavior leaders can adopt immediately to move the needle?
I think more than ever, there needs to be a conversation continuously focused on how leaders and organizations sustain growth through those more visible moments, the things that are more measurable and that can be reinforced, not just the stuff we talk about. They'll know where to compete, and they'll understand how to develop capability, but more importantly, I think, Leslie, going forward, it's how do we foster even more trust and maintain standards under pressure?
Yeah, it's the pressure thing as well, isn't it? We're all going to have that. It's all something that we absolutely need to be aware of. And I think from what you've said as a closing point, I think that growth isn't what you say, it's what you repeatedly do. And those behaviors are so important. And that's a theme that's run all the way through this interview, Rob. I want to say thank you very much for providing such valuable content. The Growth Code, I'm sure we can follow all along with that, and I believe it's out this summer as a joint co-authored event. So thank you very much for joining us today.